Welcome to Freelance Feels, a podcast for anyone who is self-employed, freelance, or thinking about it. Today, for this episode, my guest is Penny Mallory. Welcome, Penny. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hi, Jenny. It's a pleasure to join you. I love talking about being freelance.
Excellent. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell everybody what you did before we started recording. Tell everybody what you do. Before we started recording, you said you have a very unusual job and you love talking about being freelance. So tell us all what it is and what you do. And then I guess we'll go into how you came to be doing that.
What I do now is quite different to what I used to do, and certainly something I didn't ever expect to be doing. So I am, and try not to cringe when I say this, I'm a motivational speaker, which is to me the worst job title on earth. So I call myself a keynote speaker, but it is sort of in motivational stuff, but the job title is just terribly cringe.
Why do you find it cringe?
Because it just conjures up images of somebody that isn't me at all, a kind of rah-rah getting people going on. And that's not me at all. I don't do that. But it's I would say it's more inspiration. My talk would hopefully inspire you to try new things, do different things, achieve stuff, develop mental toughness, which is my subject. Yeah. So, yeah, the job title's the worst one ever.
Well, I'm hoping that our talk today, I always say to people, oh, doing a podcast, it's quite great because you actually get so much insight. It's a bit like having a coaching session often. And yeah. I'm hoping I'm going to leave here with lots of mental toughness. So, yeah, no pressure. But yeah, so is there anything else that you do surrounding that? Is there any other sort of hats that you wear, as lots of freelancers like to say?
Yes, I think when you're freelance, you have to have lots of hats and lots of balls in the air. Just in case one ball drops, you've got something else. So I'm a mental toughness coach. So I work with people one-to-one and I work with groups and teams to help them develop mental toughness so they can deliver insane targets under pressure, all that kind of stuff. I also do quite a lot of adventure stuff. So I've been a boxer. I've climbed some of the world's highest mountains. I've run marathons and triathlons and just signed up to row the Atlantic, and that's just fallen through, long story. And there's another adventure that I've got planned, which I can't talk about yet. But yeah, I've always got something on the go because I partly because it excites me. I like an adventure, but I also need to practice what I preach. And the things that I do require mental toughness in one form or another.
Yeah, fantastic. And how did you get to this point of this being what you do as a self? Have you always been self-employed? I mean, I know a little bit because I have looked at your website, but I'd love it if you could tell everybody that's listening how you came to this point.
Got to take you back to when I was 21 years old. I was in London. I had been homeless. I'd left home at 14 and I'd had a horrible time, but I actually started my first freelance work as an art director. And this is in the 80s when it was Thatcher's Britain and money was flowing everywhere, and it was quite easy to be freelance and you could make quite a lot of money very quickly for not being very good at what you do. And that was me. So I was a freelance art director for a while and then sort of did a bit of illustration and graphic design. And then I fulfilled my lifelong dream of becoming a rally driver. I'd seen rally cars on TV when I was six, and I always wanted to do it when I grew up. And of course, I had no money. I didn't have any funds to do it. But I went to rally school. I became a rally driver. I became national champion and the first lady to drive a world rally car for Ford. So I achieved more than I ever set out to. And then when my TV career finished, when my driving career finished, I landed a job on TV presenting Driven, which was a car program to rival Top Gear. Did loads and loads of car programs as a freelance presenter. And then when that stopped, I thought, heck, what am I going to do now? So now I am a freelance speaker. I speak about some of the stuff I've done. More importantly, I talk about you, my audience, what you could achieve by applying certain ideas and concepts. So yeah, I've been freelance my entire life. The last job I was employed for was in 1980 something. I have always worked for myself.
Brilliant. What do you like about working for yourself? What you obviously do love it. I mean, to stay and doing it that long and to always sort of rejuvenate, I guess, what you might be doing or turn what you did before into something like going from the driving to the presenting. What is it that you really like about it? What is the thrill for you of freelancing and being self-employed?
if I'm quite honest, it's more about the fact that I'm completely unemployable and there isn't really a job I could get. I don't have the traditional skill sets that other people have. I haven't sort of learned to trade particularly. I haven't gone through the normal process of developing a career. So I don't know what job I could possibly get. There isn't a single, you know, I don't have a CV because it doesn't look like a normal CV. It's sort of beyond my ability to get a job. So, but apart from that, being freelance means I make the rules. I don't really have to answer to anyone, and I'm a bit stubborn. I don't really want anyone telling me what to do. So I get to design my life. I can make it go in this direction or that direction. It's all down to me. I'm in control of my career. Nobody can sack me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Quite nice.
Yeah.
Nobody can give me a pay cut. Nobody can say I can't go on holiday. I have total freedom and total control. But of course, with that comes the completely unpredictable salary, income, you know, getting a mortgage, all that stuff is in parallel. And of course, if you were to balance the pros and the cons every time, I would stay freelance. And I've managed to blag my way through enough mortgages in my life to have a house. I'm sure every year it gets harder to get a mortgage probably, but I don't have to worry about that anymore, which is a massive relief. But yeah, it's had some very hairy moments along the way, that's for sure.
It's very idealistic, isn't it? I think a lot of people look at being self-employed, probably particularly when, I guess for you, you go into places and you're a speaker, so you're the person everyone's looking to. And tell me if this is sort of, I've kind of interpreted this in the right way, but it's almost like they're looking to you going, you've got it all sorted. You know, you're here to talk to us about mental toughness. You've done everything and you know what you're talking about. And you're thinking, oh, no, you know, I've still got to juggle at being freelance.
And the thing is, there isn't anyone that's sorted, is there, on the planet? We're all complex. There's mental toughness. The opposite of that is mental sensitivity. And I have plenty of mental sensitivities. I'm not unique. I'm not special. We all do. Even the toughest, mentally toughest people have sensitivities. It's just that if you want to manage stress and pressure, then that's a great way to start being able to cope and manage by developing sort of a mental toughness strategies. So, yeah, we're none of us are sorted. And I'm the first to admit that. But I certainly am super passionate about the subject, which helps, because when I get on stage, I've never got long enough. I want to stay with people all day and talk about it, but I have to cram it into 45 minutes most of the time.
Oh, my goodness. I bet, because that's the thing. When you're experienced in it, you probably, and people must ask you loads of questions once you've done a talk as well. So people are thinking, oh, well done, timing wise and everything. So I can see what you mean there.
Yeah, there's always quite a lot of questions. Even when somebody books me to speak and they say it's a very quiet audience, you probably won't get any questions. That's never happened, actually. I've always got a barrage of questions and somebody then has to stop. You know, guys, enough, you know, we haven't got enough time now. So that's lovely, because it does spark curiosity in people. And I guess when I'm speaking, I'm presenting a concept that probably people haven't heard delivered in this way. So it's my speech is a little bit entertaining, but it tells the story of my life, bits of my life, but more importantly, it's about your life in the audience. So I'm very, very conscious that I'm talking to you in the audience, because I'm bored with me. Let's talk about you.
So in terms of the topic then, mental toughness, especially with sort of being self-employed or freelance in mind, what does that mean for you? Would you be able to sort of define it for anyone that's listening and thinking, well, what do we mean mental toughness? Are we just talking resilience?
Yeah, so,
about being not pig-headed, but you know, that sort of gung-ho refusal to give up. What is mental toughness?
Well, that's what it sounds, sort of macho and aggressive, doesn't it? And it really isn't that at all. It's a lot about empathy. It's a lot about kindness. It's a lot about listening. It's a lot about seeing making the invisible visible. It's listening to what people aren't saying. It's really some very soft skills. But I suppose your ability to bounce back quickly from a drama or crisis, that's a component of mental toughness, resilience. If something knocks you sideways and you bounce back to that pre-crisis state quicker, you're in a better position to sort of get on. If it takes you forever, and for some people never, to bounce back from a crisis, life is really, really, really hard to manage. So mental toughness is your ability to manage stress, pressure, challenges, changes. But it's also about being able to work well with other people, manage, you know, being confident in your ability. It's being able to be completely committed to what you're doing. You're not having a go. You're completely committed. And it's about also being able to see that the challenges you face are quite exciting. There's sometimes a wonderful gift in the challenge you face. You know, what's great about this problem? So mentally tough people get quite excited when they're faced with a challenge, rather than some people get very threatened and sort of go, I can't cope, it's too much. So there's lots of aspects of it. And there's lots of every single person, every one of us can develop mental toughness. You're not stuck with, you know, where you were born or where you are today. It's always something you can develop. And of course, during COVID, lots of people didn't realize they were developing mental toughness without. They just didn't realise. Most people are mentally tougher post-COVID than they were before.
Well, that's an exciting thing to hear, because it feels so, you know, it feels like we've been through such a negative experience. It's hard to imagine something that might have, you know, even sort of surreptitiously been brewing in our lives that we didn't even realise we were developing.
Well, imagine, I don't know if you were homeschooling and full-time working during COVID. No, I wasn't.
Did you get two puppies?
That's the same.
Yeah.
It's a lot to manage, and for some people too much to manage, but they found ways to do it. And that was them developing mental toughness, being able to prioritize, being able to set boundaries, being able to just re-strategize about how we could fit stuff in and work it out. All of those things were incredibly useful, and as absolutely exhausting as it must have been for people, they will have come out of it more resilient. And they're probably transferring those skills that they learned in COVID to other bits of their life without actually realizing they're doing it.
That's brilliant. And something you mentioned before was that idea of bouncing back from crisis. And I can imagine lots of freelancers thinking, yeah, I feel like I have a crisis on a daily basis. With that in mind, sort of, have you had experiences in your freelance life where you've had to bounce back from a crisis that might inspire others who are perhaps, because I guess there are daily crises, could be anything from a payment not coming through to losing a client to, you know, perhaps a relationship problem or a health problem that's going to affect your work. I guess there's a huge scale, is there, of crisis, as it were, as well.
Yes, there is. And I always pick them where they're quite big. So, for example, when I was a freelance presenter, when I presented Driven for Channel 4, that was not just my job, but it was my family, because I don't have a family of my own. It's just me and my two girls. So when that show, after some years, didn't get recommissioned, I lost my income, my family, my purpose, my confidence, and I was going through a divorce at the same time. And so my entire world just fell to pieces. And that was a crisis for me in every way, shape or form. Mostly the money, because I've got to now look after me and my girls and find a house, and I've got no job and I can't get a mortgage without a job. I was lucky enough to get to present the World Rally Championship, but exactly the same thing happened with that after a few years. You know, they wound down that channel and sold it on to someone else, and I lost that job. So exactly the same thing again. It doesn't get much easier to manage when you lose your job on TV, because they're not, it's not like you can just go and apply for another one. They're very niche, very specific. And usually there's one program specializing in what you specialize in. And then you really, I suppose what I learned to do was evolve myself. And so from a motoring presenter, I did some writing, and then I did some, you know, some videos, and I just had to think of all the ways I could adapt my skill set to other things. So I did do quite a lot of other sort of low level car programs. And then I was started being asked to speak. And I thought, well, I've got nothing to talk about, to be honest. That would be silly. But I did speak. And then somebody in that audience said, hang on, can you speak at my event? And then that happened again. And suddenly I'm a full-time speaker. That this career has taken about 12 years to develop. It's not an easy one. It's an awful lot about reputation. It's an awful lot about And we get the reputation from being good.
Yes.
If you're not very good, you won't work much. So you have to have a really good talk. That takes years to develop and develop the confidence and the skills to stand on stage and deliver it. It's taken me forever to get good.
Yeah.
But when you are good or are good enough, you can start developing a reputation. And then that's when it gets exciting, which is basically the last few years has got really exciting for me. I absolutely love it. Still get super nervous every time I speak.
Really? So I couldn't imagine you getting nervous.
Yeah, no.
That kind of person.
I'm off to Edinburgh tomorrow to speak, and I'm already getting collie wobbles. And then I'm in Sweden, and then I'm in Istanbul, and then I'm in the north of England. I'm all over the place speaking. And it's just, it's amazing because I get to travel.
Mm.
I get to meet different people every day. I don't have the wonderful thing about this freelance gig is that every day is different. That's really important for me because I think I have a little bit of ADHD. I like things to keep changing, keep being interested. If I was doing the same job day in, day out, I don't think I could.
No.
I get sort of very bored of doing the same thing. So every day has to be different. So my job ticks all the boxes for me. It's just perfect.
And I bet lots of people think it's very, do they imagine, I guess, like I said before, people idealise freelancing, but that idea of, I bet there's lots of people going, oh, you're so lucky, you're going to all these cities. And actually they don't imagine the, perhaps the chaos behind the scenes of organising that, or perhaps the sacrifices that you make. You mentioned you've got daughters, and that idea of, well, you're not going to see friends and family while you're on the road, for example. There's always a side to the success and the thrive.
Traveling always sounds glamorous, doesn't it? Sometimes it is, and quite often it's just really tiresome because you know, maybe if I could just work in Birmingham every day, I wouldn't have to, you know, sit in airports and sit on flights. But that would be foolish of me to play it down. It is great.
Mm.
But I'm very happy that one of my daughters actually now works for me, doing all the stuff that I hate doing.
Brilliant.
Which is all the admin and the calendars and the contracts and, you know, the stuff that really bores me. I've got enough work now that she, and sometimes she travels with me. So, yeah, that worked out really well.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, yeah, raised
an employee. That's,
I know.
That's really impressive. I love that. What are the little challenges for you? That was a big challenge example, but what do you find comes up for you on a day-to-day basis as a freelancer that are the challenges?
Running out of ideas to promote myself, market myself. You know, if I speak at an event, I'll post something on LinkedIn. I can't think for the life of me what to write today. Those little challenges, and they are little, to be fair. It's just because I've done it for a long time. It's just finding new ways, the innovation, the creativity around what I do. And I'm sure I'm missing lots of tricks still. But I do spend, and this is the other thing about being freelance, of course, it's a very lonely world.
Yeah.
I go to an event, I speak, I come home. I don't have colleagues. I don't have an office. I don't have a team.
Mm-hmm.
It's just me and Georgie now. So that is a challenge that I suppose I'm used to it because I've never really had a proper job. I don't really know any different, but I do get quite envious of that lovely bond that people have in a team, in an organisation that I don't have.
Mm.
So that's a challenge to sort of self-motivate. I don't have anyone to lean on inspire me or give me ideas or bounce off. It's a very lonely thing. So in fact, what I do is I've hooked up with a couple of fellow speakers who I trust, and we have Zoom calls. We meet in London once in a while to just exchange ideas, talk, because they're experiencing the same thing.
You found your tribe, as they call it. You found your freelance gang.
Sort of, yeah. And of course, speakers come and go, and there's new ones on the block, and then there's, you know, the old timers. there's everybody, but usually somebody's got something useful to share that I hadn't thought of, or nobody had thought of. So that's, I think, a useful thing when you work on your own, is to just find, if you haven't got an organisation and colleagues, you can sort of find them in another form.
Yeah, that's really great advice. I absolutely love that, because I'm such a fan of that. I mean, I'm in a lot of online groups for freelancers, but it's almost like you've got sort of your core, your inner circle of people that, like you say, you can trust. So people you might share an idea with, and you know that they're not going to pinch it, basically, because there is a trust element, isn't there? When you're talking to other freelancers you don't know, and you're like, oh, I've had this idea, or I might contact this person, this trust element that they won't do that themselves and gazump you, I guess, for want of a better word.
Yeah, and that comes down to competition, which of course everyone says is healthy, but you can get quite protective when you've got a brilliant idea, you don't really want to share it. But then the people, the speakers that I meet up with and talk to, we're all specialised in something different, so we're not really competing. If you want a mental toughness speaker, you could choose between me and maybe one or two others. Yeah. But I might be mates with a leadership speaker or somebody in a completely futurist or technology. So we're not really competing. So you feel a little bit safer to have bright ideas and share them without risking losing business.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And you mentioned at the beginning about climbing mountains and potentially Atlantic rowing and all these things. And I wondered, because obviously what you do, there's an intensity, you're traveling, you're speaking, you're having to sort of be in front of a lot of people. What's my question, I guess, is often I'll say to people, what do you do to unwind? Well, you've mentioned a few things, and obviously that's more than I like to go for a jog, or I go to the pool, or I walk my dog. Those are quite big things to potentially unwind. But do you feel like it's a go big or go home with both work and the things that you do in your spare time, your kind of things, your exercise and your projects?
I am, as my friends will agree, I'm not very good at relaxing. I get twitchy and bored very quickly. So I can sit down and watch Netflix for half an hour and then I need to get up and do something. I just can't sit still, which drives people crazy, of course.
Cinema for you?
No, I I'd fall asleep straight away. As soon as the lights went down, I'd be snoring. But I do run to relax. I train, I go to the gym pretty much every day. Weirdly, that's my me time, it sounds really crass, doesn't it? But that's the bit of the day that I love. And I've now got a little tribe at the gym. I go to two gyms and, there's lovely people there. So, my classic relaxation is not probably what everyone else's would be.
Yeah.
I can't be bothered to cook anymore because I did it for 20-odd years for my kids. So I'm taking some time out from cooking. So a lot of people, like to relax. It's absolutely the least relaxing exercise for me, cooking. Very stressful. No, thanks. It usually involves some kind of physical effort, which sounds mad, doesn't it? But that's me, I'm afraid. I'm a weird, complex animal that can't sit still for very long.
But does that fuel your business, not being able? I mean, is that, I guess the question is that part and parcel of being a freelancer, that it is not being able to sit still means you are available for different things and you have always got the ideas churning? Does that come hand in hand with mental toughness as well?
Well, I suppose that kind of constant searching for something else, something interesting. I'm always trying to innovate. I'm trying to, if you told me about something, my mind would race forward all the things I could do with that and how I could make it work. And my brain is very active, sometimes way too active. So I think that's quite useful as a freelancer, because I think as soon as you start to switch off and get lazy, for want of a better word, you could risk not being on top of it and some other freelancer coming along and you're suddenly history. So for me, that slight ADHD is quite useful, because I've no interest in stopping. I've no interest in just doing the same thing. I want to keep doing things different, better. I'm always trying to find new ways, new interesting ways. And also, I'm freelance. I don't have a pension because I never worked for anyone.
E word.
So yeah. I have to start, this is what I'm about to say, has not come out of my mouth on a podcast before. I've got to start saving for my future. I've reached that age where I'm actually got to start thinking about it, because all my freelance years, I'll worry about that next year. Next year, I can't possibly afford to put money aside because I need it now. Now that's the point I've got to. So apart from anything, I've got to fill up a pension pot. Not that I'm interested in stopping working, but the time has come to actually take some notice of this stuff and do something about it. So the more I can innovate and keep going, the more relaxing and, retirement I might have. I can't really see myself ever retired, if I'm honest, but I suppose one day it will have to happen.
Is that a freelance habit, thinking that we'd never, because I feel the same. I'm a bit like, I can't imagine a time when I'm never not chatting to someone, interviewing someone, writing something. But
I can't imagine anything more awful than not getting up to do what I love doing. The thought of getting up of a day with no purpose, no structure, no reason, it's just, to me, it's utterly horrifying. I don't know. I think that's probably true for most people, isn't it? I don't know, but maybe some people are very, very comfortable with that sort of nothingness. But for me, it doesn't work. I'm sure for most people, they want some kind of reason to get up and out.
And I'm surprised, because I think I'm surprised to hear you say that about a pension, just because, there's two questions here, I guess. Sort of, it's a surprise. I wonder if people make assumptions about you because you're the speaker and you talk about such a strong subject and you've got such an unusual journey to getting to speaking about about mental toughness, that people would probably just immediately assume, well, surely someone who's speaking about such a strong subject would have something like a pension sorted. And also a bit of a freelance assumption that we don't have those things sorted, because we're sort of a bit floaty and a bit, oh, pensions, whatever, we're freelance, we're in the moment. Do you feel like people make assumptions about you because of your job, essentially, like the pension?
Well, I don't know. I've never had this pension conversation ever in my life. So this is the first time I'm thinking about it. I think what I've done is I've always been in denial about my age and the fact that this time will come. So, yeah, I'll sort it out next year. I'll sort it out next year. I have, I think about 8 months ago, signed up for a very small pension. There's some restriction. I don't even understand it. And it bores me so much. I switch off. As soon as my financial guy starts talking, I start nodding off. So whatever is sorted out, there's something happening in the background. It's not going to be enough. I've got to throw more chunks at it. But yes, you're probably right. People probably think I'm really sorted in that way, but I am a flawed human being, the rest of us. I haven't put my mind to it. I haven't thought about it. I've been serious enough about it. I had better and more interesting things to think about, is the truth. And here I am now going, oops.
We've got you on record saying she's going to do it. She's going to approach the pension. It's definitely something, it's one of the boring free, it's like you say, isn't it? And I guess there are some people that love, I interviewed someone for the podcast quite a few years ago now, and she said she actually loved doing her tax return. And the minute the deadline, the minute April, I don't even know exactly when it happens because the accountant does it all, but the minute it was time that you could do it, she got her spreadsheet out. She was like, yes, I love doing all the sums and I love seeing what's gone in and what's gone out. And I was like, oh my goodness, are you mad? And she said, no, I love it. I love the sums. So I guess some people, we veer towards what we prefer, don't we, as freelancers, and we can ignore some things because we can, because that's part of the job.
And I'm a little bit envious that she gets excited by a tax return, which I have to say, not once in my life has that happened. It's a feeling of dread, isn't it? And putting it off. So I'm a bit envious that she's quite motivated and inspired by her tax return. There can't be many people like that, but maybe that's her skill set, and that's the way her mind works. It's nice and neat and tidy, and the numbers add up, and I've done it. Little ribbon on the top, done.
Yeah, definitely.
I admire that enormously. Yeah, but the stuff that doesn't interest me, I switch off very, very quickly. Yeah. I can't hold my focus very long with something that I'm not interested in. I just saw an Instagram post this morning and it said, time never goes as slowly as being asked to watch a video you're not interested in.
Oh my goodness.
You know, if somebody shows you on the phone, you know, watch this, it goes on forever because you're not interested. And I'm terrible like that. If I'm not interested, it's really hard to hold my attention. But if I'm interested, my God, I'm all in. I'm absolutely in with both feet, consumed. I immerse myself in something I'm passionate about. Which, again, I'm not sure how healthy any of this stuff is particularly. More people are probably more even across a wider bandwidth than me. But that's just me, and that's how I am, and it seems to have gone okay so far. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I can't see myself changing too much.
Brilliant. Oh, I love it. I'm so enjoying talking to you, Penny. Thank you so much. And I think for listeners, I'd love it if you had two pieces of advice. And the first one would be, if somebody is thinking, and I don't always do this in a podcast, but it's when someone's got a job that is quite unusual like yours, that I think some people might be saying, oh, like, I quite like the idea of being a motivational speaker. How do people even think about becoming a motivational speaker? Is that something if someone's listening and they think, yes, I like the idea of that, they can pivot into? How do they even begin to get on that ladder?
There is no route to this job. It's something that you either set yourself a mission to do it. Ultimately, like I said, you have to be good on stage, which means you need to have a story, probably, or amazing content, or extraordinary delivery, or a brilliant personality, or be super funny and charming, or whatever it is. I know several people who I can think of immediately who have wanted to be speakers and completely underestimated how hard it is. It's taken me 12 years of slogging and reinventing and going again and realizing that was wrong. You know, new website, new photographs, new biography, new this, new that, new showreel. It is relentless, and you do need some resilience because it's boring doing this stuff. But it's the route. It's like the minute I give up, it's never going to happen, is it? I've just got to keep going. So for other people, it's having an amazing 45 minutes that is compelling, that people will just be, you can hear a pin drop in the room. That's what you want to deliver. Yeah. And that's not always so easy. So you've experienced something, or you have a very specific message, or, you know, people book me because they want their people or their customers or their suppliers or whatever to be able to develop mental toughness so that they can deliver, be more successful.
Yeah.
So there's a reason people book me. And that's, I think, a lot of the time people miss that when they want to be a speaker. You've got to give them the benefit. Yeah. What's the
not
benefit
just about
of me booking
in front of them?
Correct. You know, it's going to cost me some money to book you. Well, what are my people going to get from it? I need something really proper to make this worthwhile. And I think that's a trick that a lot of people miss or underestimate how important it is. So there is no route to it. If you were interested in speaking, you might offer to speak for free at a couple of events to try out some content, get some video taken of it so that you've got that to make a showreel. You've got to keep, it's hard yards. You have to just be relentless and stick at it. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's just too hard.
Yeah, it sounds like a real, very.
Yeah, it isn't an easy thing to crack, but I would highly recommend that you do stick with it, because it's so much fun. And it's not a proper job, of course, by any stretch of the imagination. And I get to be my own boss, which is, I think, the best bit of all, which is where we started, wasn't it? Which is, you know, what we
realized. Well,
I can't imagine anything more awful than having a boss, if I'm honest.
And what can freelancers and self-employed people do to, and I know obviously this is a huge question really, but if they want to develop mental toughness, I think particularly at the moment, we're talking, it's the beginning of June, it's 2023, there's a cost of living crisis. Freelancing is, it's always been tough, but it's really tough at the moment. And I think a lot of people will be thinking, I need to get tougher. I want to still be freelance. They might be thinking, but I want some more mental toughness. What kinds of things might they be able to do for themselves if they are in feeling all of that?
Impossibly hard to answer that question without generalizing. So that's what I'll have to do. And I would say that if there's something, and you might want to think about this for yourself, Jenny, if there's something I always avoid doing because it feels too hard or I don't fancy it, what is that thing? And that's probably the thing that will make all the difference to you and your freelance career. So it might be that you don't want to make the difficult phone call, or you don't want to do that presentation, you know, whatever it is. There's something a lot of people will avoid all the way through their life. Address that. Do the thing you don't want to do. That's probably going to make the biggest difference. And that, I think, is the best summary of, I think, what could help people to build mental toughness. And a lot of, sometimes, you know, doing anything, practicing tolerating discomfort builds mental toughness. So, you know, you could stand in the ice cold shower every day. You could go in the rain every day. You could hold a press up. You could hold the plank position. You could read a thesis on some subject that bores you. Anything that you don't really want to do, but you do it anyway, is helping you to build mental toughness. So tolerate discomfort. Just like COVID, we did that. It was enforced on us. But that's why I say a lot of people came out in much better shape, actually. Well, I know everyone was exhausted, and it really did rattle and destroy a lot for people. But you know, we learned a lot. We had to find new strategies. We had to find new ways to do things. We all did.
Yeah.
We had no choice.
And it feels like as freelancers, actually, at least we had the luxury in many ways. And again, if people are listening thinking, Jenny, no, it was hard. But that idea that, yeah, because, you know, I retrained as a coach in lockdown because actually I thought I do want to pivot from being just a journalist. And yeah, lockdown might have opened up opportunities for freelancers because we could say, well, I'll try using a different part of my skill set. We almost harnessed the mental toughness in a way to develop.
Exactly. No, you're describing exactly that, you know, growth mindset, which is anything's possible. I can create what I want to create. I'm in control of my life. I write the script. You know, I have to give it a driving analogy. I'm in the driving seat. I can take this machine, this car, my life, wherever I want, whatever speed. I can take whatever turn, but I know where I'm going.
Mm.
And I can change my mind at any point, but I am in control. I don't want somebody else taking that control from me. So that's, I think, for a freelancer, just an important thing to remember, that you do need to sort of grab the steering wheel pretty hard and be very clear about where you want to go. Not that it has to be that way forever. Change your mind, change direction, you know, turn left at the junction this time instead. But yeah, be very clear for whatever, short term, long term, but be very clear about what you're trying to achieve and give it everything. You know, in my experience, when you're 100% committed, amazing things happen. There are no degrees of commitment. You set a task. If you're going to complete that task, you'll probably need to be fully committed. Anything else, you're really just having a go, aren't you? Even 90% committed, you're not committed at all. That's not what commitment is. It's having a go.
Yeah.
So understanding that in the freelance world, commitment is pretty important, because ultimately what you do pays the rent. Mm-hmm. If you don't do it, you may not pay the rent.
Yeah.
And that's an enormous stress and pressure for a lot of people. And it doesn't suit a lot of people. They just can't deal with that. They'd rather
think they could do it. And actually a lot of people, I've got friends who are like, never, you know, ever even think about the idea of going freelance. And it's, yeah, for some people it's just this hideous way of working where they're like, there's no reliability and there's no, you know, kind of, you don't know where your next paycheck's coming from in many ways.
And that's terrifying. Mm. And I've been there, God knows how many times, thinking, how the hell am I going to pay the rent this month?
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing coming in. I have no idea which way to turn. I don't know who to call. I don't know. And I'm a TV presenter. I can't just get a job. And I can't get a normal job because I don't have normal skill set, normal experience. It is utterly terrifying.
Yeah.
But I suppose for me, I respond to that fear by taking action. And I can sit at home worrying about it all day long, or I can do something about it. And I'm a very practical, hands-on person. So as long as I'm doing something, it's got to be taking me forward.
Yeah.
If I'm doing nothing, I'm probably sliding backwards because everyone else is doing something.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned LinkedIn as well. And I wonder about the idea that, you know, if things are quiet for somebody, you can always put things out there. You can write some content, you can create something and perhaps see where it goes. That's the beauty as well, isn't it? You can kind of sort of put some thoughts out there if things aren't ticking along so well.
LinkedIn is a brilliant resource for making contacts, for getting ideas, getting inspired by other people's posts. It's massive. And you know, probably underused by a lot of people. I use it quite heavily because it does help. I get a lot of recommendations through it, which is really, really important to me. But yeah, I would highly recommend people really use LinkedIn a lot.
Yeah, especially freelancers. Like, lots of freelancers say to me, oh, LinkedIn's all corporate and there's nobody freelance on there. I'm like, guys, there's so much self-employed people.
Not at all. It's full of everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. That's a big message. I'm on a mission about LinkedIn, is to get people to even just to try it. I guess to come back to your point there of, you know, we'll go for it. You know, if it doesn't fit your niche, then you don't have to stay on LinkedIn. But I would say that anyone that tries it will hang around because generally it will work for their business. Like you say, you know, the more you go on it, the more you ask for recommendations, it will build for you.
And that's the thing, is you do need to be on it long enough to get some traction, because if you just went on for a month, you go, oh, this is rubbish, it's not working.
Yeah.
It does require a commitment again. And yeah, to get traction, to start making a network, to start getting people interacting with your posts, it does take a bit of time, but it's really can be very boring. But you could just put a couple of things in your calendar 3 times a week, commit to doing them, do them, and you will see quite a lot of people start to interact and ask advice and, you know, introduce you to people. Why wouldn't you? You know, it's going to take you 5 or 10 minutes 3 times a week. It's, as a freelancer, I would suggest silly not to.
Oh, there's so much for people to take away from this. I'm so grateful to you for your time, Penny. It's flown by. Would you like to tell everybody where they can find you? Obviously, people are listening and they think they might like to inquire about you as a speaker, or if people would just like to follow you so they can see the kinds of things that you share. Tell us everywhere they can find you and all the things, as you might say.
Okay, so my name, Penny Mallory, just type that into Google and you'll get all sorts of options. But LinkedIn, Instagram is mallory.penny, because weirdly there's another Penny Mallory out there that's nicked it. And so that's Instagram, LinkedIn. My website, pennymallory.co.uk. So, and there's a YouTube channel. I think it's Penny Mallory. I can't remember what it's called. There's lots of podcasts. There's lots of video stuff, lots of content to watch all for free. Just put stick my name into Google and then you can choose where you go.
Choose where you go. That's fantastic. And I have to share people as well, if they go on your website, there's loads of brilliant photographs of you growing up as well, isn't there? So there's
some hideous photographs.
I loved it. So yeah, if people want to sort of see that part of the story, you can actually see some of the photographs of you in your rally days and that kind of thing. So it's
Yeah.
Penny, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for sharing your time and your insight.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you for listening to Freelance Feels, the podcast for humans who work for themselves. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and if you have, you can rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and follow for future episodes. You can find more about Freelance Feels at freelancefeels.com. Freelance Feels also has a monthly newsletter, which you can sign up to at freelancefeels.substack.com. And for daily updates, follow on Instagram and Twitter at freelance_feels.